This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is June 6, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk this week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Hey.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can call or text. Well, actually, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can also send out an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit and comment on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, the rants that either keep me in good places or get me in trouble. But this one is actually an old rant that I promised Mike from Eastford that I would do, and I have not done yet as I'm looking through my notes, and I went, oh, I never really talked about the rumble strips. So rumble strips, in case you're not familiar with them, I'm sure you are if you've ever driven any kind of a wheeled vehicle on a road. There are these lovely strips that they put down in order to direct your, generally speaking, your motorized vehicle away from a place that it may be going, which is in danger, like the side of the road, like if you're heading for the guardrails or something like that. Or that also they often now are starting to more oftenly put them on center lines of roads so that if you're you're being a distracted driver, which we have way too many of those out there, and you tend to drift out and across that center line into oncoming traffic going the other way, then the rumble strip just very quickly alerts you with a very loud vibration through your car, and you can feel it through the car too, as well as the volume of it, and it guides you back over to where you're supposed to be. So, why are rumble strips a problem? Well, there are some roads out our way which are lightly traveled. I'm going to say lightly traveled state roads that are up in the northeastern corner of Connecticut. And they are roads that are a little twisty and turny. And they have decided to put rumble strips on the center line on some of these roads. And this is not a particular issue until drivers of motorized vehicles don't want to cross them. And if they don't want to cross them and there's a cyclist that is on the side of the road or a pedestrian on the side of the road and they get a little too close to us. So the question here is, should they be there? And is this the effective way of dealing with this? Because if you cross that rumble strip, you will feel the vibration through your car. It will obviously alert you. And I don't know if they do any damage to the vehicle or to the tires. I'm not really sure about that. But those rumble strips, according to our friend Mike from Eastford, he says that they tend to keep people a little too close to him, and he doesn't really like that a whole lot. And I don't blame him. Now, on the other side of it, if the rumble strip is on the side of the road, on the center, on the white line of the road, it will keep that vehicle, that motorized vehicle, from coming into the actual, you know, shoulder, if the shoulder is wide enough. But if the shoulder is not wide enough and there's maybe 6 inches of strip between the very edge of the road and the rumble strip, it's really annoying to a cyclist too. So rumble strips are the rant this week. We're ranting about rumble strips. We're not real happy about them. There are better ways, like you could pay attention while you're driving. That's a kind of a given. And I guess the new cars that are coming through with the cameras on them that see the lines, as long as there is a line there to let you know that you've crossed over your lane and you're out of your lane, I guess those are good too. But remember, none of that technology works unless there are brightly painted lines on the road. So that's something that to be aware of.
But you're only going to really get rumble strips on highways, on places where you do have markings on the road.
Right.
You're generally not going to have rumble strips on those back roads.
Right. But and again, the old technology in motorized vehicles doesn't have, they don't have cameras, so they can't therefore detect that you're out of lane.
Yeah.
So, and then the other piece to that too, because I looked into this, and it's like, what if you're like crossing, what if you're passing and you're going out? Well, the camera shuts off if you put your signal on.
Oh.
So it won't. No, that's good.
Right.
Because then it won't tell you that you're out of lane.
Right.
You know, it realizes that you're making a turn. Maybe it'll make you actually use your turn
signal
more.
Right.
Shout out to those up in Massachusetts. I know.
It's not just Massachusetts.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I see people not using their turn signal. It's amazing how people drive. It really amazes me.
It is really, truly become an adventure the way people drive, or the lack of attention to the driving that they have that they are paying these days. It really is. So we're going to move on. If you want to discuss this anymore, you can have additional discussion on Facebook page, Bicycle Talk on Facebook. On a positive side, I want to shout out to my guests from last week and to the NEMBA Quiet Corner chapter for their event last weekend out at the Goodwin Forest. If you missed it and you wish to know more about what they were doing out there and all the wonderful things that the Quiet Corner of NEMBA is doing for mountain biking in this area, you can listen to episode 101 at whus.org. Maintenance Minute. This is a biggie because it's if you haven't done this over the winter, like you should have done this over the winter, you want to check that cassette and chain. Have you checked your cassette and your chain lately? How many miles do you have on them? How worn is that chain? Do you have a chain checker? Do you know what a chain checker is? Lovely little device, tells you what your chain wear is and whether it's time to replace the chain or not. And the other thing that I do and I keep down in my workshop is whenever I replace a chain and a cassette on, like, Fran's bike, for instance, because I am her personal mechanic, whenever I do that or I do it on my bike, I write down the date and the mileage as far as what is on the bicycle at that time, and then I can go back and I can reference that, because I'm a big advocate of one cassette, three chains, and that is that after about 1,500 to 1,800 miles, it kind of depends on the rider, it depends on your habits. If you're a spinner, if you use high RPMs and you don't put a lot of stress and strain on your chain, you can push that number out a little bit. If you're a slugger, someone who doesn't tend to like to spin as much and maybe pushes really big gears all the time, you need to check that chain a little bit more often and replace it more often. But you can go through at least three or as many as, I will say, three chains on that one cassette, which is the lesser of the expense as far as when you're replacing your drivetrain on your bike. The other thing you need to check, though, is after you have done that, if you have been through a few cassettes, you need to also be looking at the amount of wear that you have on your chain rings. Especially important on a mountain bicycle, because mountain bikes definitely grind up the chain rings a lot quicker because of the dirt and the grime. Cyclocross bikes, same thing. Road bikes, less so, but definitely you want to just check and make sure that your wear is not up in the front also, because that can lead to wearing your chain out quicker. So all these things to check, more drivetrain checks, and definitely something to look at. We are going to move on into the show now, and I am going to start this one it's going to be an apology. And it's a comment that was made, and I am going to address it. I got a very nice email from Tiffany, who is, I'm going to read her email to you, and then I am going to comment on this. And Tiffany says, I am a new listener to the podcast. Thank you very much for what you are doing. It is important to have a positive voice about cycling out there. I have enjoyed what I have listened to thus far. I did, however, struggle with your rant in episode 97 about the woman who did not say hello. I also got an earful of this from Fran, by the way. I acknowledge and agree that it was rude of her not to say hello, regardless of what gear she was wearing and who she was representing. It is, however, my humble and honest opinion, wrong for a man, any man, to chase down a woman on a moving object. It is aggressive and inappropriate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Hold still. I'm not done yet. It is aggressive and inappropriate. It just shouldn't be done, ever. It would have been different if you were a woman chasing down another woman to share your experience. And then she says, that said, I don't know of any woman that would do this. or if the rider would have been a man. It isn't fair.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
You really could have scared her.
I didn't even think of that. And I think I did. So, you know, she makes a really good point here. It isn't fair that that is how it is in society, but in a landscape where women are routinely chased, sexualized, chastised, and judged for what we wear or what we don't wear, verbally and physically abused, or worse, you just shouldn't ever enter a woman's space without being invited. I know that you were coming at the situation at the best of your intentions, but I would carefully think twice about if it comes up again. Sincerely, Tiffany. Tiffany, thank you so much for the comment. I really appreciate that. I appreciate the fact that you're listening. I sent you back an email this morning, and I told you that I would be commenting on this on the show, and I sincerely apologize to you and to any women out there that have had to deal with situations like this, and I won't do it again, and I will think twice about it. And I've had an earful from not only you, but also from Fran.
Who jumped
on me about it too, and I, you know, with that's why Fran keeps me level.
I didn't even think about that side of it. And Tiffany makes an excellent point that I hadn't even thought about. So thank you, Tiffany. My point was simply that, you know, it's a young woman. She doesn't know the drill. I know that there are times when I'm in the middle of a very hard interval and I'm pushing and I might be focusing and I'm focusing on the road and staying safe. And I might not necessarily be paying attention to other riders around me. Having said that, it's true that there are a lot of times I am in an interval, and if I see another cyclist, I will wave, but I'm not going to do it 100% of the time. But, you know, to make an assumption that somebody is stuck up or thinks they're better than you and that's why they're doing it, most of the time when somebody doesn't pay attention to you, it's not because of your agenda. It's because of their agenda, which you have no idea what it is.
right, you know. Exactly.
And so, and in all likelihood, the woman that you went up to was probably, she may have had a million things on her mind. She may have been a college student. She may have, she may have been focusing very hard on her intervals. And Tiffany makes a great point. She may have been really freaked out that some guy went and chased her down and yelled at her. That's
right.
Like, who are you? Where did you come from?
Right.
And it's you entered her space, you scared her, and you... It's like you harshed her mellow at the very least,
right?
You know,
right.
It's so you gotta think about stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, I thank Tiffany for reaching out, and please don't be afraid to make a comment, because you know we will listen to it. If there is something that needs to be addressed, I will address it, and I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for listening. It's very, very nice. And hopefully we pass some good information on to others who are out there who may make the mistake that I made, so that it won't happen again. So anyway, thanks again, Tiffany. I want to bring up something that's coming up this weekend. There's a couple of things. I know this that these usually go into the calendar, but there are a couple of things that I do want to bring up. And one is that right here in our lovely hometown here, we have the Tour de Mansfield, which is put on by the Downtown Partnership and starts and finishes at the Community Center on Saturday morning. And if you go to the Mansfield Community Center's website, you can check there and you can get more information about that. But the other thing that I want to bring out is our good friend Tom Brown, who has a lovely podcast out there Cycle Karma, if I got that right. Hopefully I got that right. Sorry, Tom. Anyway, he is involved with Weathersfield High School and the Weathersfield High School Bicycle Club, and they are having their fifth annual Weathersfield Bicycle Festival show and swap meet. Okay? It's their fifth annual event, always planned for the second Sunday in June. And if you go onto Facebook, you can find more information about this, and you can contact them. And I think I have his contact email down here, too, in a moment.
So his podcast is Bike Karma Bicycle Podcast.
Yeah, that's it. Bike Karma Bicycle. Yep, exactly. And so anyway, what they have is the general admission is you can just go there. It's free. That's very cool. All makes, years, styles, everything good that is bicycle you can bring there. There will be vendors there trying to move some things. Maybe it'll be a, you know, just a private individual who collects a lot of things and needs to loosen up some of the product that's sitting in your garage or your workspace, and you need a little extra space. So this is a great place to go and do that. So check out the Weathersfield Bicycle Festival Show and Swap. This year, they're trying to include helmet fittings, games, and demos, and there are other family activities. Besides the normal bicycle show swap meet crowd, you'll have a lot of families, first-timers, good chance to sell accessories, and entry collector stuff as well. So hope to see you there. He says RSVP is helpful for their planning, but not binding nor required. And you can share this on Facebook. And the number here, he says, expect maybe between 120 and 320 people as it seems to keep growing every year. Please unload and reload. Folks from Boston, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Maine, and upstate New York have come to this. So if you can't come, please share. We are competing. We aren't competing with any other shows. We just want one in our backyard once a year. Come and promote your show, too. The more shows in the calendar, the healthier the hobby. So if you wish to contact Tom, you can contact him at tbrown@weathersfield.me. Okay, so give Tom a shout-out, and I'm going to say it again, tbrown@weathersfield.me. Send him an email and let him know that you're coming, or if you're interested in reserving a seller spot, you might want to check that out, too. So big shout out to Tom, and we will move on to the next thing. So I have a little piece here, kind of interested in talking about food for thought is what I'm going to call this. And it's I'm asking you, what is in your back pocket? What are you riding with? What in particular works for you? And there are some natural things that you don't have to go out and purchase a pre-made item, a packaged item. And you can do things very simply by carrying some good natural foods in your back pocket. And I know Fran will jump in on
and
this.
So you want me to be quiet during the segment?
How could you possibly ever be quiet during this segment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'll let you take the lead, and I'll let you draw me in. How's that?
That's perfect.
Okay.
That's mm-hmm. a perfect thing. That's the way that works.
Okay.
So there's no doubt when it comes to good health, you can't beat real, whole, unprocessed foods that provide the nutrients you need without the added sugar, chemicals, and preservatives.
Oh, can I say it? Can I say it? Can I say
it? Not yet.
I have to say it.
What?
Eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Didn't we do that on the last show?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. There you go. The same rules apply for how do you fuel your ride. Minimally processed foods provide energy, vitamins, and minerals that keep your hardworking muscles spinning down the road without added ingredients and can aggravate your gut and slow you down. And usually they're cheaper than the processed snack bars, so you save some cash too, which is kind of cool. So here are five tasty, portable, and perfectly natural, nutritious snacks that you can slip in your pocket to fuel any ride. Here's my favorite. Bananas. They're Mother Nature's original energy bar, prepackaged in a convenient biodegradable wrapper. That's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
A medium banana serves just over 100 calories and 27 grams of carbohydrates, which is a perfect amount to top off your tank when you're out for a couple of hours. Bananas also put back what you're sweating out. namely potassium and magnesium, and also provide a hit of essential nutrients, the vitamins B6 and C, copper, and manganese. For an even tastier snack and extra sustenance, toss a portable packet of your favorite nut butter in your pocket and chase down your banana and chase down your banana bites. You'll get a little fat and a little protein, and it'll keep you going for the long haul. I will note also, this is from a Bicycling Magazine article. It's in reference. Next thing on their list, they have raisins. Okay. They don't call them nature's candy for nothing.
Yawn.
I know, boring. Raisins are just as sweet and satisfying as sugary treats, but 100% natural, antioxidant-rich.
Yeah, that's true.
And heart-healthy. A quarter cup provides 120 calories, 29 grams of carbohydrates to keep you going.
And then there's raisin alternatives.
Well, there's some things, yeah. What do you have for raisin alternatives?
Oh my goodness, because raisins, I'm just so bored with raisins. Well, first of all, when they're in season, to carry actual grapes, because they're fun. And
I love grapes.
If you have grapes with seeds in them, it's fun to spit them on the road. Mm. Try to spit them off the road. The other thing I wanted to throw in there about the bananas.
Or on your friends when you're riding along with them.
That's good.
Yeah.
The other thing about the banana, I know that if I'm riding my bike and I see a banana peel on the road, I'm like, oh, a cyclist was here. But the other thing I think is, why did they have to throw it in the road?
I don't understand.
Did you ever see the silly slapstick where somebody's walking along and they slip on a banana peel and they fall and it's slapstick humor?
Yeah.
What do you think's going to happen if you ride over that with your bike?
Do you know why they slip on that? Because it's really slippery.
It's slippery. I know. Yes. And the other piece is that, if you throw the banana peel in the road, you just said it's a biodegradable container.
I love that.
It's really great. But if it biodegrades on the road, it's not going to do anything any good for any plants.
So you
should be throwing your banana peels off the road.
I think Fran.
In the dirt.
I think Fran is in the middle of a rant.
Throw your banana peels in the dirt. Don't throw it somewhere where the biodegrading is not going to do anything any good, or where another cyclist could ride over it and slip.
You heard it here first. Fran rants.
Yes.
That was called a frant.
So other raisin alternatives. There's so many small dried fruits that you can carry that are going to give you lots of different benefits. One of them is goji berries. They're awesome. And I think they're really delicious. And they're the same, about the same size and roughly the same shape as raisins are a little rounder. Goji berries are more cylindrical.
Mm-hmm.
But they're so good, and they're going to give you that energy. They have protein in they have probably more protein than a raisin, because goji berries have seeds in them.
Right.
So, and they're absolutely energizing. I mean, that's why they're used in Chinese medicine. But you can carry them like you carry raisins.
They're really easy to carry in your back pocket. That's the nice thing.
You can also, there's other little dried fruits that you can carry. So goji berries, you can get dried blueberries. And dried blueberries can have a lot of antioxidants, also going to give you energy. And dried cranberries, that's another great one. And then there's a wonderful superfood called golden berries, which are really high in antioxidants. You can get, if you go to health food stores, you can get mixes of all of these. Like there's a dried fruit mix that you can get that has many different superfood berries, including goji berries, golden berries, raisins, blueberries. Even dried cherries are really awesome. And then also cherries are now coming into season. Just fresh cherries in your pocket are pretty awesome.
Oh, they're wonderful. They really are.
And they're fun for sharing with your friends. You know, you reach in your pocket and you share some with your friends.
Right.
And then you have to spit out the seeds. Again, try to spit out the seeds so they're not on the road, if possible. Give back to your environment,
yes.
Absolutely.
So the other thing about raisins is they're specifically proven performance boosters. They improve performance just as well as energy gels or chews when eaten before or during exercise
that
in head-to-head
really
comparisons. And if you miss the flavor options you get from the energy gels, there is a particular company, which I will keep quiet because we're not promoting any brands here.
That's making flavored raisins.
Makes flavored raisins.
That's so cute.
And they come in sour strawberry, sour lemon, sour watermelon flavors with no added sugar. They contain potassium, an electrolyte that helps you maintain fluid balance, and iron, a mineral that chooses your that boost your oxygen carrying capacity, and they also come in handy single serve little
okay,
boxes.
Okay, you got me. I want to try those.
Yeah, I saw this and I went, oh my God, this has Fran written all over
it. We have to go find them. Where can you get them?
Well, you can get them at apparently any of the retail outlets that sell raisins.
Okay.
So I would look there.
There is a supermarket, for example.
A supermarket, for example, and there is the brand has something to do with there's a woman's picture on the outside of the box. And I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
Because I don't want to promote for them because, you know, we shouldn't be doing that. So
yeah.
But anyway, yes, they are available at your local grocery store. The next thing on the list here, which is interesting, is nut butter honey roll-ups.
Yeah.
Long rides require complete nutrition, including carbs for energy, protein to protect against muscle breakdown, and a little healthy fat to keep your energy levels even. This easy-to-assemble ride snack has it all. Just mix your favorite nut butter with a couple of spoonfuls of honey and mix until blended smooth. Of course, if you have a nut allergy, you don't want to do this, but anyway, smear evenly over the center of a tortilla, in my case, it would be a gluten-free one, and wrap it tightly to keep the gooey goodness inside. In a series of studies that have found that honey increases endurance as well as popular commercial energy gels. It's also as delicious as it is nutritious.
And if you want to avoid it, like if you're gluten intolerant or you don't want to eat bread or you want to keep your carbs down, you could do it's now becoming easier to find coconut flour wraps.
Mm-hmm.
That's so you could make this with a coconut flour wrap. I'm just
sure
trying to think,
could.
Is there some other not messy way? The other thing to do if you want to is you can get a flask and you can put mush in a flask.
You could put that.
Nut butter.
Right.
If you don't want to deal with the carb, like you don't want the bread
right.
or the grains, because some people don't do well with grains on the bike, that they're hard to digest, and
okay.
they just want to do the honey. They want to have more honey and more nut butter, so you can put it in a flask. You can also just put straight up honey in a flask, and you can have honey, as it says here, works as well as energy gels.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
And then the other thing is, of course, if you're using a flask, you're using something that you can reuse over and over and over
That's
again.
That's right.
So you're not ending up with foil wrappers.
Yes.
Which are another environmental concern.
Yes.
So you can do that. And if you do end up wrapping it up into a tortilla of some sort or a wrap, then, of course, you don't have the wrapper again because
that's
you're
right.
eating the wrapper. So that's kind of nice.
And
so,
I also recommend if you're going to do honey, it's a good idea to not get pasteurized, processed honey.
Right.
That you want to get. It's better to get local because you're supporting local business.
Right.
But get, a less filtered honey or, if possible, a raw honey or an unfiltered honey. That comes locally, and it tastes so much better. It's going to have a lot more nutrition in it. It's not going to be strained and pasteurized, and it's not going to have a lot of the bioflavonoids taken out. If you get a really lovely dark honey, it's going to have more nutrition and antioxidants
right.
in it.
You like the B grade? Is that what that is?
No, that's maple syrup.
That's maple syrup.
And I don't know if that's going to be on here.
I'm sorry. I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, maple syrup and maple syrup. So we're talking
That's
about honey.
One.
Yes, maple syrup is another thing that you can use instead of energy gels. Absolutely. And yes, as you said, I prefer the grade B because the grade B, I believe, is the second pour. The grade A is lighter and sweeter. And if you want an application for your honey where you want it light and sweet for culinary reasons, then by all means use the grade A. But the grade B, for nutrition and robustness, it's got a deeper, smokier flavor. It's a little bit lower in carbohydrates and has more nutrition in it.
Right.
And so for our purposes, that's what we're looking for.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. That's great.
So into a flask.
So anyway, yeah, honey and maple syrup. And, you know, with that, there's that company that does, they do maple water also.
Maple water also.
Which is another
issue.
Way of getting, you know, the pure nutrients from the tree into
yeah.
you, which is good.
And that's more of an electrolyte issue
yes,
than
is.
A than
yeah.
a carbohydrate. Whereas the maple syrup, you're getting absorbable,
right.
sustainable carbohydrate, as you are with the honey. But right. the... the maple water, you're getting electrolytes, which are going to help keep you from cramping. Yeah. And
so there's cool stuff out
hydration.
There. Definitely cool stuff out there. So here's another one. Pickles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Welcome to the new cycling snack on the block. For those who like a break from sweet snacks, pickles provide a salty, crunchy bite that can help replace lost electrolytes on a long ride. There's some evidence that pickles also can help prevent and even stop muscle cramps.
Yes.
In a study published in Medicine and Science, Sports and Exercise, researchers found that a bit of pickle juice could relieve muscle cramps within just 35 seconds.
And also, a particular naturopathic physician discovered that during the Steeplechase bike tour, when approaching the descent on 89 and the naturopath's muscles were starting to cramp, this naturopath found that ingesting a fair bit of pickle juice aborted the muscle cramps rather rapidly.
I know that wise person.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. So scientists suspect that it works because the sharp, vinegary taste triggers a reflex that helps override the firing of your cramped muscles.
Yes, it's a counter-irritant. That's exactly right.
So how do you eat a pickle on a bike ride? All right. You slip one in a baggie or wrap it in a tortilla, and you've got your muscles covered.
Yeah. But I think if you want to – well, you might get the effect from – you know, the cramp-aborting effect from biting into the pickle. You might. And you want it to be pretty – you don't want it to be super sweet. You want it to be pretty vinegary because you want it to make your nose screw up.
A good dill pickle.
Yeah, good dill pickle, but it should be have a bite to it, not be super sweet. Because if it's super sweet, you're not going to get the counter irritant effect. The other thing that works for that, of course, is cayenne.
Mm.
So if you have pickle juice and you throw some cayenne in it, even better.
So that particular naturopath that we were speaking about earlier, and I have a water bottle in our refrigerator that is just pickle juice, and we keep it in there for those days when you went out and you really exhausted yourself and you feel like you need to put a little something in, and you can just take a little shot glass, have a little pickle juice when you get done with your ride. It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Right. And I also tell people who are not necessarily athletes, if you're one of those unfortunate people who cramps at night in bed, they keep some pickle juice on your nightstand.
There you go.
Pickle juice and or something with cayenne pepper in it.
Right.
They can both work. The other thing that will probably work is fire cider.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use a classic fire cider recipe, which is going to be apple cider vinegar that's got all those – it's got cayenne – it should have cayenne pepper in it.
And the vinegar is the triggering mechanism, too.
So it's vinegar and cayenne together along with garlic and horseradish and turmeric and a whole bunch of things that are good for you.
So these are all things that you can carry with you on your bike that you don't have to buy in a package.
Right.
Which is cool.
You're kind of buying in a package.
Well,
but they're not a commercial specific, exercise specific food product.
Right, right.
Yeah, they're just
and yet they give you the same benefit as those particular commercial products. So now all the commercial product people are going to write me emails and rant on about helping them out so much. But hey.
I will say that there are certain commercial products that I have used that I'm very happy with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few that I have used that I have liked that are definitely, for the athlete, and they work great for me. There's two companies in particular that are my favorites.
If you're on a budget and you want to keep it simple, do that.
Yes.
You can certainly keep it simple.
Oh, you know what? You know what we didn't talk about, which would be really cool, is dates. Take dates. Pitted dates, you may have to pit them yourself, or if they're already pitted, great. Take the dates and stuff them with almond butter.
Oh,
and maybe almond butter and honey.
Right, there you go.
Actually, if it's a date, you probably don't need the honey.
How about apricots?
You could do them, but you can't stuff them easily. Dates are a little tube, and you can put stuff inside. But dates with almond butter in them, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good.
We should go home
good.
And make some of those today.
Okay.
Yeah,
I remember we have date.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah.
All right.
So, there are ways of doing it without, getting yourself overly invested in prepackaged food. And you eliminate the package situation, too. So you now don't have to recycle the cardboard box. You don't have to recycle the packaging and everything else that's there. You can just make your own food and good energy food. So that was something that I wanted to talk about was what is in your back pocket. And I'm sure there are other things in your back pocket, too. Some people carry tools and all that. But I was really kind of focusing more on the idea of food, because it's a good time of year for that. It's a really good time of year for that. So next on my list, we have been through the Giro. And, of course, last week I had mentioned that Chris Froome won the Giro in an outstanding, like, monumental performance in stage 19, and where he literally blew everyone away. He took a big chance with 80 kilometers to go and ran away with the race, put 3 minutes on the field. There's a lot of talk going on out there, which is, you know, I guess it's a concern, because, you know, how do you get that big of a burst of energy? Do you just wait and to the appropriate moment? Which I got to tell you, the waiting and the brilliance of the attack and when it happened was second to none. I have not seen that kind of performance since the early days in cycling, when I first started watching and paying attention to bicycle racing. That was a really, really strategically well done attack. It was at the right time. It was a huge chance to take with 80K to go, and it was a big deal. But of course, everyone is now concerned as to whether Mr. Froome is is doing anything that's not quite legal,
and
whether he's on the sauce or not, right?
Boy.
And so, of course, he's had this the asthma situation, and he's been taking something for that. And there is concern that at one point he was tested and he had a much higher dose in him than he should have had, than the UCI finds legal. And that comes back from a scandal that happened back since December, and it revealed that he had been tested for twice the allowed amount of asthma medication, salbutamol, during the Vuelta a España. So anyway, there's a lot of concern, and there's a lot of people talking about this. The UCI is talking about this a lot. They're concerned about, you know, they want the UCI, the governing body of cycling, wants Froome sidelined as the anti-doping case drags on. And this was dated from Velo News. This was dated June 5th, so very recent. You know, the governing president, cycling's governing president, David Lampartian, would sleep better at night if Chris Froome suspended himself from the 2018 Tour de France and other competitions. Froome is still celebrating his Giro victory from last month as he trains for the Tour, which starts July 7th. He has a right to compete even if a process is going forward due to his ongoing anti-doping case stemming from the 2017 Vuelta a España. The British Grand Tour star tested positive over the allowed limit for salbutamol after stage 18 of the Spanish Grand Tour. So, you know, when I was elected president of the UCI, an hour later I was informed of Froome's test. So everyone has trouble understanding how, after 9 months, it still is not advanced, Lampartian told Le Parisien. But this issue is incredibly complex, more so than anyone we've ever had in cycling. His point of view, he says here, is that it's always been the best thing if he does not take part in the competitions. It would calm things down and he could focus on his defense. If he decides to race, we respect his right. Rules for specified substances differ from others that draw immediate bans. The governing body's own rules allow the cyclist to race in such a case. So there's talk. And there's talk about whether or not he should be, you know, stepping aside from the Tour de France. There's also that. There's also the, you know, the elusive, can I win both of them? And it is not something that is easily done. I don't know if anyone's actually been able to do it. Usually they blow up in the second one, or they blow up in the first one, then come back for the second one. And they'll either do really well in the Tour of Italy and then not so well, and then they, and vice versa. So it's a tough thing to do because you just don't have that much time to recover. You know, when you think about racing your bicycle at a very, very high level, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute, at a very, very high level for that many days, and then giving your body enough time to recover and yet still maintain your fitness at the same time. Rest is best, but you know, you can't stop riding your bike if you're getting ready to do another 22-day race. You know, you have to keep some sort of activity within your body and to be able to try to maintain the fitness, because otherwise you're going to lose the fitness at the same time. So how will Chris Froome do in the Tour de France? That's a good question. It's a really good one. And who knows, you know, what we're going to see, but we're going to see it pretty soon. And he is truly, he's going for number six if he does that. So he is actually, he has won 5 Tour de Frances and he is looking for number six. And he would certainly be a very strong talking point should he go in that direction. So I also found this great little article about wattage and Chris Froome's winning Giro d'Italia number. The winning number, the average power in the Col del Finestre attack was 397 watts. What does this mean? Well, everybody's got different wattage that they can put out. There's a correlation to strength to weight ratio, your kilos per wattage output. There's a lot of things that go on with this, but 397 watts is the number behind Chris Froome's stunning attack on the Col del Finestre, which blew the Giro d'Italia apart. That was stage 19. He was the first British rider to win the Giro d'Italia and the first cyclist in 35 years to hold all 3 Grand Tour titles. And it was all down to his blistering performance on a 9.3% grade over 3 kilometers, in which Froome averaged 397 watts of power at an average cadence of 95 RPMs. Okay, 9.3%. Fran, think about this one. 9.3% grade. Pretty sizable grade.
That's cadence. That's the Kankamangus.
Average cadence. That's the very top of the Kankamangus. It's 6% before you get there.
Mm.
So 9% grade, 95 RPMs. Averaged 397 watts.
We are very strung.
We are superhuman. this is an athlete that, you know, is just at a level that I just don't know of any other sports where you can put out that kind of power and that kind of work for that much time. I mean, it was incredible. The attack came that came 10 kilometers in the Finestre with 80 kilometers of the race meeting was followed by a descent and an average speed of 53.4 kilometers per hour.
Okay.
Right. The feat resulted in Froome winning stage 19 by 3 minutes over Richard Carapaz. Froome ended up winning the Giro by 46 seconds from second place Tom Dumoulin, Team Sunweb, with 4 minutes and 57 seconds from third place Miguel Angel Lopez after 3 weeks of pulsating racing. He was one of 144 riders whose power, speed, heart rate, and cadence this company Velon tracked through the Giro, and they brought the Team Sky numbers together so you can see the numbers from on his road to Rome. And so if you want to know more about that, there's a website here, www.velon.cc, and you can go check that out, and there'll be and just look this up and see exactly what is going on here. There's some just fascinating numbers here. Just crazy stuff. So stage 3, just to put this into perspective, Froome endured a difficult start to the Giro, crashing before the race and even started while while racing Stage 1's time trial course. He consequently spent Stages 2 and 3 sheltered in the peloton, recovering and expending as little energy as possible. In his first 30 kilometers of Stage 3, he averaged 36.6 kilometers per hour and 183 watts, hitting maximums of 596 watts and 57.7 kilometers per hour. When was the last time you put out 596 watts?
Never.
Yeah.
I mean, not this lifetime.
No, not this lifetime. I have been recorded in the mid fives in a full sprint, and that's, you know, on a trainer.
I think maybe I hit 400 so once.
It's
Tabatas.
It is a big number.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really big number.
Yeah.
And, of course, it all goes by your body size, too. There's a lot of factors involved here. So, and you have to take all that into account. But the fact that that attack on Stage 19 is just is overwhelming. On Stage 14, Froome had looked a shadow of his normal self for the first 13 stages of the Giro, and was 3 minutes and 20 seconds adrift of Simon Yates and his overall lead. He was in 12th place overall. But then he sprang to life with a superb solo victory on Mount Zoncolan on Stage 14. The victory was built on a 1.3-kilometer attack where he averaged, get this, 465 watts on a 15% grade. So there you go, 465 watts for 1.3 kilometers. That's an impressive output. I think that he probably spent some time in zone five on that one. Just really, really incredible stuff. He lost time on after his win on Zoncolan, and he struggled on Stage 15, lost time, dropped back to 3:22, and it looked like, you know, Yates had this thing down, and then he launched that incredible attack. So, you know, Chris Froome, a lot of power. He can put out some serious power. It's impressive to see the what a professional cyclist puts out as far as their power goes. Power to weight ratio, watts per kilogram. How you can boost yours, and unless you only ride on pancake flat surfaces, improving your power to weight ratio is a must. Power to weight ratio is an oft quoted phrase in cycling, especially by cyclists who find themselves struggling when the terrain goes up. It's also a formula that many Grand Tour contenders place a huge amount of importance on. So why is power to weight important, and how you can improve yours? This is where we get into that gray area of, well, you know, it helps to lose a few more pounds because the less you carry, the closer your power to weight ratio comes together. So you'll see a lot of these, you know, these Grand Tour riders. I mean, they're emaciated. I mean, they are real, real thin, riders.
And by the way, that's not good for you.
No, it is, nor is it. If you take a look at a marathon runner, you'll see the same basic structure with the marathon runners. Their strength to weight ratio is very, very high. So they've really got that part down. But there is a point where you are on the edge of physical exhaustion and your body is really struggling to maintain itself at that point. But if you can work on it, it makes a difference. It's less to carry over the hills. It does make a difference. So cyclists who don't ride perfectly flat and smooth roads, that's all of us, then what happens just as much as your maximum power output is the amount of power that can be produced in relation to body weight, power to weight ratio, usually expressed in watts per kilogram. To work out your power to rate ratio, simply divide your maximum power output in watts by your body mass in kilograms. For example, an 80 kilogram rider with a maximum sustainable output of 280 watts has a power to weight ratio of 3.5 watts per kilo. So these are great things to know because you can, it matters. It's a great predictor of performance. Take two cyclists. Cyclist A can sustain a maximum power output of 250 watts, while cyclist B can only maintain 225 watts on a perfectly flat, smooth indoor track where gravity is not an issue. We can confidently predict that A will be faster than B. On an undulating road, however, power to weight begins to matter more. If both cyclists weigh 80 kilograms, it will still be, A will still be faster. But if A weighs 80 kilograms and B weighs 68 kilograms, cyclist A's power to weight ratio is 3.13 watts per kilogram and B's is 3.31 watts per kilogram. On a flat road, there may not be much in it, but head to the hills and cyclist B will be the one who's pulling away. So it's something that you, it's nice to work on it. It takes time. It takes a good coach to help you with this. It takes a lot of understanding your body and understanding how everything works. I'm not telling you that you should go out and lose a bunch of weight to make this happen, but it does help if you can streamline your body a little bit. You want to do as much as you can to be carrying as little weight as possible if you are climbing in a lot of hills. So the lighter you are, the easier it is, only because your power to weight ratio is higher. I do not have a really high wattage output. I've been tested and my wattage output is not extraordinary. My VO2 max has been tested. It's not extraordinary. But when I was racing my bike, I could climb away from almost anybody out there. And it's because
you weigh 2 pounds.
Because my power to weight ratio was really tight. I was running. Yeah, I know. There we go. I got fluffed on the
raspberried.
Yeah, I got raspberried on the radio by Fran. That's mm-hmm. only here at Bicycle Talk, folks.
So I had a wonderful acupuncture appointment on Monday, and I was chatting with Nicole before my visit. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Nicole does is she helps people lose weight.
Acupuncture.
With acupuncture and, advice and cleanses
and other things.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But yes, with acupuncture, because mm-hmm. she helps you with your cravings and your tonify your spleen chi. There's a bunch of things you can do with. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Cool.
Acupuncture is great for addictions of any kind or, habits. And it's great for all sorts of stuff. But anyway, so I said to Nicole, because one of her questions on her intake is, are you interested in losing weight? And I said, yeah, I'm always interested in losing some weight. Because I could stand to lose a few. I could probably get away with not, but I could probably stand to lose a few. And she said to me, what weight would you like to be at? And I said to her, well, I could probably do better if I'm rocking like $130, $135. But I said, that's not as important to me as my strength to weight ratio and how fast I get up the hill. Because, I have a lot of muscle mass, so I tend to... I noticed that women who weigh what I weigh are bigger size than me, but because I have a lot of muscle mass. But yeah, I don't care about the number as much as I care about. She said, "Oh, is how you feel?" I'm like, "Yeah, how I feel," but more importantly, getting up the hill fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. So that's something to think about too. That the number on the scale is not anywhere near as important as your body composition. And what your goals are, if you want to climb hills faster, you want to be at a weight where you can do that. And that doesn't necessarily have to be super skinny for our purposes. But, if you know that you have extra fat, you could probably lose the extra fat. But you also want to build the muscle mass to a point where it can help you up the hills. And your weight is going to sit higher. The number on the scale is going to probably be higher than somebody that's the same size as you who doesn't ride a bike.
Right.
So just know that. Don't get real attached to the number on the scale.
Right.
Because muscle weighs more than fat, and having muscle is good.
It is good.
There is a point where it's too much. But
if you have it in the wrong places, it can be too much if you're looking at a specific sport.
Yes, that's right.
Like if you're a runner or a cyclist, you don't want to be carrying a lot of that extra bulky body weight on the top part of your body.
Right.
But on the bottom part of your body, you're obviously going to get some strength out of that. So
But when people are carrying too much weight, in terms of, like, if you're worried about them not lifting too much for their upper body,
right.
most people, that's not their problem. The problem is that most of the weight they're carrying is, you know, an extra donut or two around the middle.
It's what we like to call the spare tire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or two, or maybe enough for the whole Peloton. So anyway, we're running out of time. Here we go. I had a couple more things I was going to mention. I'll probably draw them over into next week. And it's all about why smart cyclists train with watts, and also an FTP test. And it's the gold standard for cycling performance. It uses all types, and it's useful in all types of events, from sprint triathlons all the way through multi-stage cycle races like the Tour de France. So we'll talk a little bit more about your functional threshold. And we'll hit that next week. In the meantime, we have to wrap this up. Franny, we did it again. We wasted another perfectly good hour.
Oh.
Maybe it wasn't wasted. Anyway, upcoming events. Once again, a reminder for the Wethersfield Bike Swap. If you're not doing anything on June 10th, it is at the Wethersfield High School in Wethersfield, Connecticut. You can check out more about that and on their Facebook page. So look it up on Facebook and you'll find more about that. Also this weekend right here in downtown Mansfield, I called it downtown Mansfield, it's very funny, we have the John Jackman Tour de Mansfield, and you can learn more about that at the Mansfield Community Center's or the Mansfield Recreation Department's website, and they will help you out with that. It is presently, the tour is presented annually by the Town of Mansfield, the Mansfield Community Center, and the Mansfield Downtown Partnership. And there will be a 7-mile campus cruise, a 20-mile bike ride, and a 38-mile road ride. So 38-mile and 20-mile road ride. Also coming up, actually, Fran and I will be off to our second Farm to Fork Fondo over in Warwick, New York. Which is, yay, Farm to Fork Fondos, cool, cool. Your old pal, Pedal and Ron, and co-host Fran will be there to greet you. Ride around the Quabbin, which is on June 16th, coming up very soon. Not much traffic, plenty of hills, and it's not a race. I love that part. The Seven Lakes Ride, which is on June 24th, 2018, and that is starts and leaves from Stafford High School in Stafford Springs, Connecticut. There's a 20, a 25, a 45, and a 62-mile route to choose from. And, again, beautiful roads up here in northeastern Connecticut. If you have not found us yet, look us up. We've got a lot of cool stuff to offer here. We have beautiful roads, twisting, turning, winding, lots of hills, and very few cars. So that's always a beautiful thing. On July 28th, 2018, we have the Thread City Century Ride, brought to you by the Thread City Cyclists, leaving from Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. That's Saturday, July 28th. On Saturday, August 18th, there is the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which is calling all cyclists, walkers, and families and friends to join us for a ride/walk. Meet us at Eastern Connecticut State University Athletic Complex. Rain or shine, choose from 5 different scenic routes or a 5-mile walk and ride. Okay, and of course, if you want to learn more about the New England bicycle racing scene, you can always go to bikereg.com, which is a great place to see where all these events are. And sometimes you can also find other events like fondos and tours and different things too. So my name is Pedalin Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have been listening to this live or on podcast and you'd like to comment, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.